What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Hey, man. We are getting ready for preseason game number two, and we hope you are as well. Look, there are some jobs up for grabs tonight. I think between tonight and the end of regular camp, the cutdown day, a lot of things are still yet to be determined. And I know many of you are like, yeah, but what about the quarterbacks? It's interesting, Mike, around the league, if you look around the league today, unlike week one in preseason, there are a lot of quarterbacks that are not playing this week, right, that either played last week or still have not played. I just saw Trevor Lawrence is going to play for the first time in preseason since he's been with the Jags. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's one of these things where you start looking around the league and every coach has their own way of going about this.
Yeah, and as we said, since they went to this three-week preseason, I don't know if there is a definitive way to do it. I think we all looked at Zach Taylor and the Bengals and said, man, Joe Burrow's had a lot of injuries the last couple of years, but they're putting him out there. And Andy Reid, I mean, the guy is one of the top coaches, you know, first ballot Hall of Famer, and Patrick Mahomes wants to play, he gets to play. And he looks good, and okay, you're ready to go. Put you back on ice for the next two games. Everyone's got a different approach. Coach Raheem Morris, as we've said this week, kind of vibes what Sean McVay does, you know, with the Rams. But I don't know. I just think when a guy's only got three starts, I think you want to get him as many opportunities to have live bullets. But then again, you're also throwing your first team out there. Do you want to put the wear and tear on your veteran offensive line?
Yeah, we're going to talk plenty about it. We're going to talk about some of the battles as well. But as we start the show today, there is big news in college football. Now, it's not as big of news to me because you punished the program and you punished certainly, you know, fining Michigan the way that they fined them. But at the end of the day, Mike, Michigan is still allowed to participate in the postseason. And when you talk about where this came from, guys, obviously Connor Stallions, the sign-stealing scandal. And for Jim Harbaugh, who I don't think ever needs to go back to college football, he's probably hurt most by this because he has a show calls for 10 years. Right. Stallions has an 8-year show call, so it'll be a while before he probably coaches or even is offered anything in college football. But for Coach Sherrone Moore, that guy right there, it includes a 2-year show calls order during which he is suspended for 3 games. That includes the self-imposed 2-game suspension in addition to the first game of the 2026 season. Now, this is a lot of lingo, but at the end of the day, the guy that got the most punishment is the guy that's not there and not in college football anymore, and of course, that's Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah, now, I got to double-check, and maybe Orin or Day-Day can check, but $30 million, is that the biggest fine as far as a cash fine the NCAA has ever levied? Because you're basically admitting that you have done a New England Patriots Spygate-style, you know, investigation of other teams' signals and how they call their plays. And to me, it taints the Michigan National Championship. It just does. What team has won a championship and got hit with a $30 million fine potentially? And that's a series of fines. It could eclipse. It actually goes over that number. To me, if this was an SEC school, could you imagine, Carl, the hue and cry from the elitists?
Right.
And for those who are not familiar, maybe you're not familiar with the Big Ten, Michigan is a sanctimonious, snobby, self-righteous, sacred cow. And to me, it's tainted. But and this isn't, you know, sour grapes, for lack of a better word. But to me, when the NCAA drops this kind of hammer, I mean, there was obviously malfeasance. We'll never know what the Patriots did in the NFL because they burned all the evidence. But to me, this is unprecedented, and it does put an asterisk in the minds of everyone outside of Michigan about that championship.
So, obviously, Penn State was different, but it was $60 million fine for Penn State.
But that's a very creepy apples and oranges based on what Jerry Sandusky was doing and the way they stuck their head in the sand on that.
Correct. But you asked about the fine. That's bigger than this, but it's different. With that said, at the end of the day, Michigan looks at itself and, you know, they're not giving up the chip. Mike, you're right. It taints it, but they're not giving it up. And this just makes you wonder how long, again, this was going on. I'd really like to dive into the details of this investigation to find out. Was this really, because, you know, I watched the documentary on Netflix. Okay, whoop-de-doo, Connor Stallions told you what he was doing and how it went down. But how long did they really do this and how much did they really benefit? Either way, there is enough evidence to show that the committee on infractions viewed it enough to say, hey, we're going to do this. Now, guys, in the old days, and we do mean like the 80s or 90s, this might be the death penalty. But the NCAA is never going to do that again after they destroyed an SMU program that it took 30 years for them to get back to a competitive level. So when you start talking about taking money from the football program, saying that coaches that were there can't coach anymore in college football with a 10-year show calls and an 8-year show calls, and then your head coach currently a 2-year show calls order. Remember, it's a little bit different during which he is suspended from the for a total of 3 games, and that starts with the 2026 season. Bottom line is, this is stout. It is a stern punishment, and it's a slap to Michigan football. And you're right. If this was the SEC, and pick your program, guys. I don't care which one it is. Auburn, Alabama, Georgia, pick your program. People would be going crazy.
Yeah, and that's my point. And we've talked a lot about how, you know, the Southeastern Conference, that's why it's so funny with all this heat and, you know, Big Ten flexing because they won back-to-back natties and talking about, well, look what we do head-to-head in bowl games, and they doubt the SEC's strength of schedule. Everybody knows in this part of the world, past the eye test, this is the most stout conference from top to bottom, and this is also a conference that for years there's been a perception that somehow they're bending the rules, that somehow they don't play by it down here because we've got the best athletes and they want to stay local. All the nonsense that they spew up there in Big Ten country. I mean, to me, would you take and right now it stands at $20 million. I just read in Brett McMurphy's column, and it could go up of 30. Is it worth it? Yeah. You finally got your first championship since, Brian Greasy was your quarterback in 1996. But to me, it never looked right. And there's something about the way you go. You know, if it's one rogue guy, but this was institutional. And as the NCAA basically said with the cause penalty, that Jim Harbaugh was clearly aware of what they were doing.
Yeah, that's the part about this. And we played sound bites of Jim Harbaugh talking about, you know, I was taught never to lie, never to cheat, never to steal. And it all sounded good. And for Michigan fans, all they cared about was winning a championship and beating Ohio State. And Harbaugh did that, and he did it consistently, especially at the end. But when you find a head coach to have violated his responsibilities by failing to promote compliance and allowing a culture, Mike, in which the staff disregarded the NCAA rules, because it's always, I didn't know. It's always, I wasn't involved in that. That's what Harbaugh said. And he allowed everybody else to kind of, oh, well, such and such knew. But he also knew because this was too far wide and spread within the program. 404-726-0929. We're starting there today. Obviously, Falcons' second preseason game. But this is big news in college football. And again,
lie,
how?
Never cheat.
Here it is.
Never steal.
How does this affect them moving forward? Somebody just asked. I don't know. I have no idea. I really don't.
Well, Sherrod Moore gets another, a couple of games off. He was the offensive coordinator. By the way, I loved him in FBI, Carl. He's fantastic.
That's another Sherrod.
But anyway, Sherrod Moore, the Michigan coach, he's when he was crying when Jim was in the hotel in Happy Valley. Remember they played?
These guys did it, man.
By the way, Michigan, you're a bunch of frauds, and that's what it takes to finally get a natty. Everybody in the world knows what it was, you know. And as I said, I've been to the Big House on one occasion. The elitism, you know, you saw that in that HBO documentary on Ohio State. They make it easy to dislike as well. But I just kind of think the comeuppance for Michigan, who always claims to do it at a higher level. We won't stoop to the level of the SEC. How many years did we hear that crap, right?
For years.
And the Big Ten and everything else. And then they pull this. So to me, I think that the guy who's the passionate fan, maybe the average fan doesn't catch it. Passionate fan knows where this was.
Sherrod Moore, apart from the 3-game suspension, he is not prohibited from engaging in coaching or other athletically related activities during the show calls period. In essence, guys, he's your coach. He's going to get a slap on the hand because, again, he wasn't the coach in charge, which was Harbaugh, who's now gone. And now, by the way, how do you look at Harbaugh running to the NFL after all this crap? Remember, it was like, oh, how that all played out, he knew this was coming down. And he wanted to get the hell out of there as fast as he could, and he did. And look, when you are Harbaugh, you're going to get opportunities, which he did in the NFL. But now that even looks suspicious to me, Mike, because it was like, is he going to go back to Michigan? There was no way in hell he was ever going back to Michigan.
Right. It's the ultimate irony. I mean, he could never beat Ohio. He got on a run against Ohio State. He started it. But, you know, the idea they were ready to run him out of town. Go back and look at – you can look at the timeline about the Michigan boosters and the alumni thinking about buying Harbaugh out and getting rid of him. And then he basically stoops to this level to win a natty. And then, as you said, he gets out of Michigan, gets out of Ann Arbor ahead of the posse. So, like, Harbaugh skates don't mean nothing, but it is something now that Michigan fans and college football fans can debate from here to eternity. This is now a tainted national championship.
2023 is when they won it. 2023. All right, we're coming back. We got a lot more to dive into. BMAC, Brian McFadden. We'll join a CBS NFL analyst. We'll talk to him about tonight's Falcons game and all the things that are going on around the NFL. And there is a lot as we head to week two of the preseason. Stay right there. It's Dukes and Bell.
Coach Harbaugh, love you, man.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
It's Radio 92.9 The Game. Appreciate all the comments and texts, whether it's on the text line at 404-726-0929 or on social media. It's funny. Our man, Mr. Yo, says this was a slap on the wrist.
Totally.
Michigan didn't really get penalized here the way that they should have. He said it should be vacated. Their title should be vacated. I don't disagree with that. Look, I think they went all around the edges with this and didn't really get to the meat. We're doing all of this stuff. Look at what we're doing. Big money. Look, we're finding them. Guys, we're taking care of coaches who are not there. They didn't get to the meat. So I'm agreeing with him.
Just real quick, we're going to get to Bryant, Carl. But, yeah, the NCAA Michigan case chief officer named Norman Bay, quote, "You don't put together a network of individuals called the KGB that records dirty film where the cost is in the tens of thousands of dollars unless you intend to gain a substantial competitive advantage." That's posted by Chris Vanini from The Athletic. Exactly right. And, by the way, with all that, they still couldn't beat Georgia in 22.
No. And again, that's why I said, how far does it go back? That's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Does this go back from the time that Harbaugh got there and it was a slow build and then ultimately it led to a national championship? Or was this just the last few years? Either way, they were all in. More on that to come, guys. Let's talk to BMAC, Brian McFadden. He is with CBS Sports and NFL analyst, has been covering the NFL camps and obviously two-time Super Bowl champion with the Pittsburgh Steelers, joining us here on Dukes and Bell. B, we're a little frustrated. I know we've had this conversation, but, you know, week two, all right, this might be the last chance for us to see our starting quarterback. And then Raheem Morris comes out this week and says he's probably not going to play, which he's not. But they had a joint practice. So my question to you is, let's do away with preseason and have more joint practices around the NFL because we're seeing more of it anyway.
Yeah, we are seeing more of it, and I think it's more of a personal preference in terms of the head coach, because some coaches, they have joint practices, and they still play their starters, you know what I mean, a series or whatever the case may be. So it's all about the personal preference of that said head coach, and I think Coach Raheem is just feeling like his starters are getting more than enough work throughout these joint practices that he feels they don't need to be participating at any point in those preseason games. And you guys know how I feel about it as well. I feel like not playing in the preseason in those games, regardless if you have joint practices or not, should be an earned opportunity, in my opinion, right? Because if you have been overly successful, if you've been a playoff caliber team, if you've been getting in the postseason and your fans have been really, really rejoicing because of your success, that's one thing. But if you're trying to find all of those relevant entities that I just mentioned, I think you should participate in preseason games. I think it's really important to establish rhythm, because when you look at Atlanta, I mean, the first game is against Tampa. All the first four games are against NFC opponents. And those are four games. When you look at the schedule, you have Tampa, Minnesota, Carolina, Washington. Right. It's safe to say in two of those ball games, I think Atlanta should be the favorites when you look at Minnesota and Carolina. In my opinion, when you look at the success, from a year ago and then the expectation for this year. Those are four games where you want to make sure you don't come out slow. Because in my opinion, when you look at those four games, guys, you can easily see a 3-1 scenario or maybe a 2-2 or 1-3. Either case, you don't want to get off to a slow start because we will do what? Look back to these missed opportunities in preseason games.
Hey, B, I know we talked so much about Michael Penix Jr. getting ready. I know you played defensive back, but how did you approach the preseason, and what was the attitude?
Rhythm. Mm-hmm. When I was in Pittsburgh, and you got to look at my tenure in Pittsburgh, we were always pretty good, right? So the starters all played at some point in time. Granted, it was a different landscape because we had four games. But now when you look at the landscape only being three games, it's all about having the starters get out there to have that rhythm. Because I never felt like when I became a starter, and the same can be said for the entire locker room, the first time we're in a game-like scenario is week one. No, because now you got to go through the growing pains. At least when you play a series or two in preseason play, you kind of get those game-like kinks out of the way. Because you can say whatever you want to say about how valuable joint practices is, guys, Carl and Mike. It's not the same than being in the stadium when you have to get these stops. Because think about it in joint practices. If you don't get a stop in a joint practice game-like scenario, what's the ramifications? It's not a real game, so you can't lose or you can't win. It's not the same. So I understand folks say preseason is fake football. It's not fake because there's still ramifications at stake. People are watching you. You have millions of fans watching. You have people in the stadium watching you. You have game-like scenarios that you go through in regular season games. Third down situation, trying to get a stop, red zone situation, not trying to allow points on the scoreboard. Those are different entities in terms of joint practices that I think are meaningful to get that rhythm going for regular season football.
Bronch McFadden, I made it a big deal. I thought it was a big deal, and then it turned out to be a big deal. Because the debut of Shedeur Sanders was the most watched preseason game in 10 years on NFL Network. But yet he's hurt now with this oblique. What is the quarterback situation? What is the outlook there in Cleveland for you?
Well, for Shedeur, his momentum that he gained because of his performance last week is stagnant right now. He had really good momentum in terms of moving up the depth chart because of how well he played. He was slated to start this preseason game against Philly. Not to mention they had joint practices where he was going to get significant reps to kind of continue to showcase I could be a guy. But because of the injury, it just opens the window up for a guy like Dillon Gabriel to steal some of that momentum or earn some of that momentum that Shedeur Sanders received from a week ago. So it's just the unkindly fall in football with injuries when you can't control these things. But for Shedeur Sanders, because he was last on the depth chart, currently fourth, this is something clearly he didn't need at this time because he had good traction going into week two. And now we got to wait and see because think about this. What's his status going to be for next week? We don't know.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So that oblique injury is very, very tricky because he got injured warming up, I think, during Wednesday or Tuesday practice. But remember how fast they came out and said he's not going to play Saturday. And, like, it was almost like, well, dang, it got to be serious if they're already saying he ain't participating when the game was, like, 2 or 3 days away. So we don't know. We got to wait and see. But I can tell you this much. Indirectly, Dillon Gabriel is smiling from ear to ear. Man, he's elated because of this opportunity. Not to mention Shedeur is injured. So, right. Like I said, indirectly, I'm not saying he wished any injury upon any player. But now this actually opens the window once again for him.
Real quick, Brian, just as a follow-up on Carl's question about Shedeur, if by chance, because of the injury, they place him on the practice squad to start the season, does another team come in and swoop him up, or is there more collusion?
You know, that's a good question. That is a good question. And that's the thing for Cleveland. Do you take a chance in doing that, Carl, Mike, right? Do you take a chance in doing that and put him on the practice squad where you know someone can probably come get him? I don't know. Because I'll tell you this much. If you put him on practice squad, if I'm Sean McVay, I go get him because of what they're dealing with now with Matthew Stafford, and then you look at Jimmy Garoppolo and just the future plan at the quarterback position. So I don't think they put him on practice squad, and that's the main reason. But secondly, when you keep Shedeur Sanders on your 53-man roster, the bottom line will always be in the positives. You guys just stated this was the most watched preseason game on NFL Network in over a decade. It was solely because of 12. It ain't had nothing to do with Bryce Young. It had nothing to do with the Panthers. It had nothing to do with Kevin Stefanski. It was solely because of 12. So now, if I'm the owner for the Browns, I see the value that Shedeur Sanders is going to bring, even if he don't play. Because if he's on the roster, fans are always going to think, well, this might be the opportunity that he might play. Because we know Cleveland probably will be bad this year. So now, if Shedeur Sanders is on the roster, people are going to tune in just hoping for a letdown by Joe Flacco or whoever the starting quarterback is, just to see if Shedeur Sanders is going to get an opportunity to play. And people are going to tune in just from that side, from that standpoint, regardless.
He played 11 snaps in the first preseason game. I'm talking about the Heisman Trophy winner. Five, I think, on defense, six on offense. And the bottom line for me and Travis Hunter is you played defensive back, as Mike mentioned. Is this real? Like, is this what we're going to see when the season rolls around? Is he really going to play 30 snaps on offense and 30 on defense? I still have a hard time believing it, B.
I think he's going to play more offensively than defensively. I would prefer Travis Hunter play, start on the defensive side and be more of a rotational player offensively, because you guys know how the game go. Most of these starting wide receivers are coming in and out of the lineup anyway. It's like Drake London, for instance. In Atlanta, he doesn't play every offensive snap. He doesn't. You know what I mean? And that's usually the mindset for wide receivers. But if I'm Jacksonville, when you start in the secondary, A.J. Terrell ain't coming out the game. You know, Jesse Bates ain't coming out the game. So it would be easier to get him acclimated to the offensive side of things than being more of a situational player on the defensive side, where rhythm is very, very important. But you know what I did, guys? You know, I'm a fantasy lover. I love fantasy football. I went and looked at the wide receivers in terms of the projections for week one and kind of throughout the entire season. Guys, they had Travis Hunter projected to get around 14 points, which is really, really good. Really good. And not just 14 in week one, but throughout the entire season. So it's almost like they're anticipating seeing Travis Hunter more so playing offense than defense. And for sake of argument, let me guys give you the comparison. Ja'Marr Chase is slated to get like 18, 19 points. Justin Jefferson is around 15. So Travis Hunter was in that top three, top four category in terms of his projected fantasy points in week one. So that tells me the odd makers and the experts really believe Travis Hunter will play more offense, way more offense than defense.
Talk about man Brian McFadden. He won two Super Bowls. Man knows what's what. The Steelers are a fascinating story, man. By the way, I said to Carl, and I know you're pretty close to Pittsburgh, I love Cam Hayward, but, man, it seems like he's barking up the wrong tree at age 36 to be asking for a raise. Sounds like he's going to be in camp, and that's that, right?
Man, that is a very, very, you know, confusing situation right now. And it's confusing because it kind of came out of nowhere. You know, throughout the entire offseason, Cam was very, very adamant about Aaron Rodgers and talking about Aaron Rodgers being a part of the team. And then during camp, now he's basically a hold in. Now, I can't disagree with Cam Hayward. If you're talking about being in the late 20s, if you had to rank the players in his position and what they will see in 2025, there's no way Cam Hayward should be in the late 20s. No, he at his age, he's still a dominant interior force. He means a lot to the defense. But when you look at where he is, to your point, I mean, this probably will be his last ride in the NFL. So how do you handle this contract situation? And Chris Boswell is also holding in also. And we know how what his value is to the team and with his skill set at kicking field goals and extra points. So I think they do get something done. I think they value Cam Hayward too much to not get something done and expect for him to come play under that salary for 2025, but it kind of came out of nowhere when you look at all the moves they made and anticipating and thinking that Cam Hayward will be a part of the team day one in training camp, but clearly that has not been the opportunity.
That's how I feel. B, great stuff, man. As always, we'll continue to count down to the regular season. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, thank you, Matt.
Bryant McFadden. Falcons, Titans tonight. If you're wondering, Titans are a three-point favorite. Mike, even after the brawl?
Well, I mean, I guess, is Cam Ward going to start?
I guess. Yeah. He's going to get his taste of his second preseason game tonight.
I mean,
yes.
We know these games are meaningless, but when you got a quarterback with only three starts, as Carl and I have said, still want to see him out there. But maybe after the brawl, we don't want to see him out there, Carl.
Hey, man, stay there. We'll get to the Daily Download. Happy Friday!
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report. He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
It is Dukes and Bell talking about the biggest story today in college football. We're going to get to the games here within about a week. But I think a lot of people were waiting to see how this all might play out. And it did today for Michigan as they get fined a lot of money. And Sherrone Moore suspended for one game in 2026 as part of a show call situation. But this stems from the sign-stealing scandal, guys. And that was Connor Stallions. A guy on Twitter just asked me, Chris, he said, Dukes and Bell, bigger fraud, Michigan or Astros title? And that's a tough question because they were both, now you can legitimately say, right, they were both cheating, Mike. But I think in right. college football, like, it's just another level. I'm not going to tell you that the professional level doesn't matter, but it's one of those things, right, if you can get away with it and the Astros thought they could, it doesn't make it any better. But if I had to choose one, I would tell you this Michigan thing, man, because so many people were in on it.
Yeah, I mean, a conspiracy, no one can keep their mouths shut, generally. In the case of the Astros, you know, MLB was sniffing around, people started ratting. In the case of in Michigan, they just had so much evidence. You know, the head coach was deleting text messages. Well, why are you doing that? You know, and it's funny, I just saw, you know, Dave Portnoy, you know, a zillionaire who started Barstool, who's going to be on the Fox pregame this year, is a Michigan man, basically saying, minimal fine, $20 million is nothing to Michigan. Even more reason, if you don't like Portnoy, to really hate him. And then watch him, you know, it's almost like he's anti-Feinbaum or it'll be the Big Ten's version of Feinbaum this season. Apparently, Big Ten people despise Feinbaum and how he's, you know, paraded out by ESPN. And that's where some of this, you know, all the mishigas, that's a Yiddish word, means aggravation over the perceived, you know, preference to the SEC, which, I mean, look, the preference is, there is no preference, just better quality football on the field for better, basically 2 decades. And it's great to see 2 natties, you know, for the Big Ten, but one now is now tainted, period.
Real Blue is his Twitter handle, Real Blue 4, and he says, Dukes, the whole point of punishment is to discourage bad behavior. But the one the NCAA handed down to Michigan, I think, does the opposite of that, in my eyes. I'm not going to say it encourages it, which is what he's insinuating, because, listen, there's nobody who wants to take this fine and have right. to deal with that. But I also, I agree, like, does this deter some other school from saying, we cannot attempt to cheat? Guys, there'll be other ways. The Michigan found a way. There'll be another way down the road. Somebody will attempt to do this. And I got to tell you guys this. With all this damn analytics stuff out there and AI, it's only going to get worse. So somebody will take a chance and do something down the road. But I agree with you. I don't know if this punishment discourages that where you go, man, there's no way we're ever going to do this. And by the way, dog fans, this should make you respect what Kirby accomplished in back-to-back even more.
Right.
Even more.
You dropped Michigan like first period French in the Orange Bowl that year. Remember that?
Yes. Yes.
And, you know, that's the thing. I just – look, with the Astros, it goes – you can take it all the way back, Carl, to the Brooklyn Dodgers taking on the Giants. I mean, you know, Ralph Branca to his dying days swore that Bobby Thompson knew what pitch was coming because the Giants had a guy with a telescope out there in center field behind the Chesterfield cigarette sign. You know, so baseball, they've always looked for an advantage. But when it becomes systemic, when it becomes like what the Patriots did, again, we only know from anecdotal stuff about the Patriots. The NFL thought it was so bad they destroyed the evidence, so we'll never know. But in the case of this, tens of thousands of dollars spent by Michigan. So as we said, Harbaugh was certainly complicit, but it doesn't matter because he skated to the NFL.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. I mean, like, I keep looking at, you know, all the wording of this, how it came down today. As we said, more on this because it is a big story. George is going to scrimmage tomorrow, so we'll talk more about that on Monday with our man Connor Riley. But if you have a thought or two, we'd love to hear from you guys because, to Mike's point, and here's the other side of this. I mean, Mike said, you know, they think they're better than everybody else. The deal with Michigan, it is one of the premier academic universities. And that is the snobbery that we're talking
Correct.
About. Okay. It sees itself, all right, and has for many years as an Ivy League type school that happens to play sports in the Big Ten. And the Big Ten academics, think about this, as they expanded, and I'm going back 20, 25 years, you couldn't get in the Big Ten because those schools don't have the academics that we need to improve the Big Ten. Teams, there was teams that wanted to get into the Big Ten, but Michigan was always the one that was like, they're not smart enough. So that is part of this that we're talking about today. If you guys are missing the entire gist and what Mike is laying out for you, that is what we're deciding and talking about when you say Michigan thinks it's better than everybody else. All right. I know we got other stuff. I'm hot because I'm like, there should have been more on this. It should have been more punishment. But this is how they saw it. All right, man, 404-726-0929. More of our thoughts, more of your thoughts as well. We got to get to the daily download.
Story number one.
Mike, they did it again. I mean, they came back and beat the Mets again. Hey. And Michael Money Harris did it again.
Liner toward the gap. And it gets down, and it gets by Mullins. And the speedy Eli White is going to score with ease. Michael Harris strikes again. And this ball game is even at 3 apiece.
They've lost 13 of their last 15 games, and their lead over the Reds, who were idle, by the way, for the final wild card spot, is down to a half game. Let's ruin the Mets, Mike. I'm all for this.
Yeah, man, you're really breaking the Mets' spirit. I mean, it is kind of funny. On one of the worst Braves seasons in, what now, 7 or 8 years, they still find a way to get it done. And I just think it's great to see what Michael Money Harris is doing. And, yeah, we can debate, you know, why they didn't make the adjustment, although, as we talked about with Grant McCauley yesterday, to really kind of reinvent your swing mid-season, that's really not done in baseball. That's something you might try to tweak, but they really did kind of reinvent it, and now it's paying dividends. Hopefully it carries on. But, you know, there's still 6 weeks to go, and I know we've had some passionate conversations with Grant and the audience about, you know, what do you do with this team? They want to win. They got pride. They are professionals. But I would give Acuna a lot of extra days off. I would give Austin Riley extra days off. Sale. Same goes for Strider. You know, let him compete, but let's manage it, Carl, down the stretch. How's that?
It's great, because that's exactly how I think they're going to handle it. And what they're going to do is say, he played, but he really didn't play. And I just am afraid, and call me a scary cat or whatever the hell you want to come. I'm just afraid that you people are going to call us as soon as something bad happens to either one of these guys, any of these guys, Sale, mention any of these guys that are coming back, and you go, well, I don't know why they played him, because that's the first damn thing that's going to be out of your mouth. So I'm with you. Manage it in a way that, yes, you're playing and we got you back, but come on, man, let's be honest. This isn't about now. This is about moving forward and making sure that we've got everything. By the way, real quick, I got to ask you something.
Yeah.
Have we gotten the best Chris Sale we're going to get? Would you move on from him? Would you try to trade him?
Well, again, it's such a freak injury because, remember, he fully extends, so it's a rib thing.
Yeah.
I would say that anytime, you know, it's like in the NFL. Like, well, for instance, what we're dealing with, Darnell Mooney. That's upper body,
what's
although Mooney has had some injuries over his career with the Bears, too. But with Sale, I think it's such a freak injury, and the way, like, I have one, you know, Cy Young. I know, I'm going to roll because there's still such, even at what we gave up, it was, you know, let's be honest. It didn't mean anything. Vaughn Grissom is a whole lot of nothing. The contract is basically peanuts by Major League Baseball standards. No, I roll the dice. Keep him.
Okay, cool.
Take it to the limit.
I when we talk about this offseason and, like, the changes, and I keep talking about the core group, maybe Sale is a piece that you can get some younger pitches.
But you drop Sale. But this is the mind of the reset. The organization is never going to reset. They're never going to cop to it. So if you're going to move Sale, now you've got to replace – well, you got Strider, so you're replacing 4.5 of your starters, Carl.
Right, that's right.
Because you're still hoping that Strider comes back.
Yeah, it's that's why it's an interesting question. All right, something we'll examine as we move forward. Braves move on, guys, but another series win against the Mets. It's the Guardians tonight. Let's get to story number two.
Story number two.
It's our Falcons taking on the Titans tonight, preseason. Coverage begins at 5 o'clock right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We won't see him tonight, but Charlie Warner, damn good dog, talking about Michael Penix and the confidence he exudes.
He's dripping with confidence, you know, which I like to see, especially from a young kid, you know, going into year two, only four or five starts under his belt. Yeah, we definitely feed off Mike, and he's letting it rip out there. I think he had a really good day yesterday. Had to watch the tape on today, but yeah, I think he had a good day again today.
Courtesy of the Morning Shift. If you missed any of our interviews, guys, any show, Dukes and Bell, Andy and Randy, Morning Shift, make sure that you go and check them out. Rewind, subscribe to us, Dukes and Bell, and don't miss any of our content on the Odyssey app. Mike, we're not the only game tonight. It's Kansas City and Seattle. That's the late game tonight, but no Patrick Mahomes tonight, by the way.
Yeah, man, he you know, had his chance to play. And again, when we say about, you know, starting your veterans, yeah, for a series, maybe two, you know, but when you don't have the experience, see, I don't know. We keep banging the drum on this. When you've only got three games, but I can't put Penix Jr. out there unless I got Caleb McGarry on one side, Jake and Bergeron and Neusel and Lindstrom. Otherwise, it's going to be a long night. And then you are going to endanger your quarterback. Same goes for Kirk Cousins. You can't have Kirk out there behind that second offensive line, despite the way the coach equivocated when you asked the question about second. And by the way, shout out to I want to give a shout out to Jerome, not your Jerome from Alabama. Jerome was a retired high school teacher, and he says he wanted to give you and I credit. He said, for using what some people would say $10 words on the show. He says, you know, it's always fun. He goes, you can never go wrong with going highbrow and having somebody look something up. So for you kids, for the third time this week, look up equivocate, because Rod does a lot of that in the press conference.
Yeah, I want it more. I think if I would have asked a specific question about one particular guy, I was doing it a disservice. And the reason is because Mike and I understand the unit has not been great. So it's not one guy. And part of it is, guys, again, injuries and you're moving guys around. Some guys have not been available. Listen, this Storm Norton thing, we talked a lot about him last year because he did a really admirable job. But Mike, it's like, okay, he's hurt and it's no big deal. It is a big deal because he was one of the swing guys that we needed last year. And you need to know what that rotation is going to look like. Now, he's missed a lot of time, in my opinion. I mean, like, I don't know exactly, because every day there are certain guys we're out there going, is he out here? Is he available? Is he working with the trainers? What's going on? Is he in the 11 on 11? We're trying to figure out because, again, you know, right, you got 100 guys out there. But the bottom line is, like, the O-line second team tonight, and I'll tell you this now, and I'll say it at 5 o'clock. Can we run the ball a little bit better tonight?
Yeah, that's definitely got to be goal number one for this team. Let's establish the run now. You don't know as much about these running backs that are the backups behind, you know, Bijan and Tyler Allgeier, but these guys, you know, are going to be looking for a job because, you know, it's hard to imagine keeping Allgeier because of the cost involved, you know, moving forward. So when you look at the running backs, all right, man, let's see what you got. You know, Carlos Washington Jr. is out, so it means it's questionable. I don't know if he's going to go, but yeah, Nathan Carter and the other dudes will have a chance. So that might be part of the reason. They don't have the bodies, but we do want to see – For what it's worth, Easton Stick continue to look good out there, because if Kirk Cousins can be traded before, you know, I think it's the first week in November, that's the trade deadline, Easton Stick will be the guy backing up Michael Penix Jr.
Yeah, and that's why it's interesting. There are jobs that guys are playing for, and I think there are three position battles on the defensive side of the ball. We're going to talk more about that along the way as well. We'll give you the full slate of games. We got a bunch of teams, almost every team, playing between Saturday and Sunday. And then the second week of the preseason will be down, guys. We're getting closer and closer to cut date. The latest on Matthew Stafford when we come back, because this is a developing story. I think, Mike, there's something going on here. And when you start saying, hopefully my back responds, that's not good. We're coming back. It's Dukes and Bell.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.